Next on BYUSN, college football playoff rankings week two. Hey, BYU still unbeaten at 9-0. Did you know that? Where will the Cougars land in tonight's CFP rankings? Stuart Mandel of The Athletic shares his thoughts on a wild finish between BYU and Utah and what the Cougars' chances are to land an at-large spot in the playoff.
Are we buying that BYU men's basketball has not just one, but two first-round picks currently on the roster? And BYU special teams, well, it's been special this year. But what are the top five special teams plays from this season? We'll count them down in Top 5 Tuesday.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. We are live on a Tuesday, November 12th. I am Spencer Linton, alongside a man who apparently doesn't shower after he has a bad show, Jason Shepherd.
Not true. I could bomb every show, and many of you may think I do. I'm still using soap when I shower, unlike Syracuse head coach Fran Brown, who apparently doesn't shower after losses, saying, quote, "I don't deserve soap."
Wow.
Wow. So basically you're hoping for as many wins as possible.
Did something bad happen to him in his childhood?
There's a psychologist that's like, we need to dive into this.
Was he withheld soap when he was a kid?
You'll get soap when you, yeah.
Oh my good, do your homework or no soap in the shower.
Yeah, I completely understand feeling like you need to earn things. Soap shouldn't be one of them.
Holy cow. By the way, saw a report, I think it was in the New York Times recently, that was like, there's little to no benefit of showering daily. And saw then the replies following, except it makes you not stink.
Yeah.
So there's a benefit there, right?
Yeah, everybody else around you is just hoping and praying that you do use soap. So,
hey, power to you, Fran Brown. Listen, if you want to impose a penalty on yourself that way, that's fine. Unfortunately, you're penalizing everybody around you, too. All rise and shout. It's time for What's Trending.
7 would probably be a pretty fair place for the committee to put him.
BYU should be higher.
Let it out, baby!
And it's very interesting parallel to see this Cougar team inching up and up and up the way it happened.
In 84, baby!
Climb those rankings. What's Trending, presented by BYU Food to Go, the MVP of your next event. BYU somehow, someway, Jason, made their way to 9-0 after Saturday night. They are ranked number 7 in the latest AP poll. But the rankings that really matter are what happened tonight when the College Football Playoff Committee will reveal week 2 of an unbelievably entertaining poll. Where do you expect BYU to land in tonight's second edition of the College Football Playoff rankings in 2024?
Yeah, I'm not going to overthink this. I think we're probably going to see the minimum. And by minimum, I mean 2 spots.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 1 for a second.
No, and the reason I say minimum is there were 2 teams ahead of them that lost. I would love to see them move up 3 spots to sort of make up for probably being a spot lower in the initial rankings. And get to 6.
Jason, but Penn State's resume is so strong.
It's true.
It's so strong.
Look, and Indiana is working teams. So it doesn't mean that they're good teams they're working, but that's fine. I'm expecting with the 2 teams that were ahead of BYU and several other teams losing, I would expect them to drop behind BYU and others, and BYU and everybody sort of in that mix to move up 2 spots. That's basically what I expect.
Wow. Here we are yet again, same week, but a lot of the same storylines, which is, what do you do with an undefeated BYU who survived against Utah? So do the Cougars get penalized for not beating Utah by more than they did?
Yeah, okay.
And that has come into the conversation legitimately.
100%. And look, and our producer, Colton Potter, brought up a great point. You cannot penalize a team for having a close win and then reward a team for a close victory, or a close loss.
Yes.
You can't have it both ways. If one is not right, the other one can't be right. If you cannot penalize both. A win is still a win. You can't have a close loss and give somebody the benefit of the doubt. Well, but it was close. Nah, it doesn't work that way.
There's something to be said about teams that take advantage of the opportunities and the luck that is granted to them and paying it off. Not all teams can do that. BYU 4-0 in one-score games this season.
Yep.
Talked about this yesterday. Their ability to finish games should matter. And you look at a team like Kansas, who is a good football team, Jason. They embarrassed Iowa State last week,
right,
in large part. They're 0-5 in one-score games. That is the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Can you finish a game? If you can, then you are where BYU currently sits at 9-0. I agree with you. I think BYU is going to show up at number 7 in the poll just by way of Georgia getting blown out,
yeah,
at Ole Miss and Miami losing against 5-4 Georgia Tech. You know who beat a middling team on Saturday night and didn't stumble? BYU. Miami could not survive, yep, Atlanta and Georgia Tech, so they will drop. So, pretty simple. I think BYU should and will show up at number 7. I was on my high horse last week comparing resumes with Penn State specifically. I get that strength of schedule matters. We just showed you a graphic that had Tennessee, Penn State, Indiana, and BYU on it. BYU wins in all of the categories we presented except for strength of schedule. Tennessee and Penn State clearly have a stronger strength of schedule at 30 and 35 respectively. BYU at 54, Indiana at 100. And then you see wins versus ranked teams. And these are teams ranked by the College Football Playoff,
yes,
Selection Committee, Jason.
Correct.
We're not taking ranked wins from the AP. This is the committee ranking those teams. BYU has 2, Indiana none, Penn State none, Tennessee 1. I don't have an issue, again, with the eye test theory, if it's consistent, but it hasn't been. It's not consistent. They argued for Miami, who had the eye test.
Yeah.
If you want to say Indiana's been blowing out teams, fine. They survived against Michigan, whatever. I still just, I cannot understand why Penn State, even Penn State, has been ranked above a team like Indiana.
Right.
Indiana's been more dominant on the field in their competition, but they don't have the strength of schedule. So I don't know. What does the committee value? Clearly it is eye test and strength of schedule,
right,
not as much as ranked wins and strength of record. I don't know why.
I
would love for them to explain that to me.
Well, and what's going to be interesting is throughout the next couple of years, there's going to be a year, maybe next year, where that starts to become the priority and somebody's going to get, you know, hosed because they don't have the strength of schedule or the strength of, you know, wins. There's no rhyme or reason to it. And I think that's what frustrates people, is that you think you're going in with one set of rules and criteria to determine an accurate ranking for all of these teams, and then it becomes very subjective, and what you thought was going to be important is now no longer important or less important, and it gets frustrating. It gets frustrating because you look and you see these teams that have a 0 in the loss column, and then you see teams that have a 1 or even a 2 that seem to be given more, more stakes in the game.
Sure. Here's something to watch for tonight. What does the committee do with Alabama?
Right.
Because Alabama has a great resume.
Sure.
They have some huge wins, including absolutely dismantling LSU in Baton Rouge under the lights against the Tigers. That does not happen, Jason. That doesn't happen to LSU at home. Alabama embarrassed them, but Bama, of course, has the loss to Vanderbilt, which is kind of a head-scratcher. Like, okay, what do we do with that? But again, so they have some super high-quality wins. They beat Georgia, for crying out loud, but maybe Georgia's not as good as we thought they were. What does the committee do with Alabama, and where are they in relation to BYU?
Okay, so we've said where we think BYU is going to be. We've each come up with what we expect to see tonight, 1 through 12. Both of us have added a 13 and 14 as well. What does your list look like on what you expect to see tonight?
I don't think there's any doubt that the top three will be Oregon, Ohio State, and Texas.
Yeah. We both agree on that, yes.
I believe will be the case. I have Indiana jumping all the way to number 4. And again, we just showed you Indiana compared to Penn State. Indiana is 10-0, and if they want to use the eye test, Jason, they've been dominant outside of the close win against Michigan, but still, you beat Michigan. I think Indiana should and will jump Penn State.
Mm.
The committee will put them at number 4, Penn State at 5, Tennessee number 6. They jump up a little bit. I don't agree with Penn State at 5, but I think that's what's going to happen. They've showed us what they value. So I think the Nittany Lions will show up at 5. BYU following Tennessee, and then I think Alabama jumps all the way to number 8. I don't know how you would take a 2-loss SEC team and jump them above an undefeated BYU. Alabama would have to probably do something. I don't even know if they had the opportunity in their remaining schedule to do what they did against LSU, but they need another statement, like a huge statement, to make a case like we belong above BYU. We're better than BYU. Notre Dame jumps one spot to number 9. We'll see. That's another fascinating one. What the heck does the committee do with the Irish? Because they lost at home to Northern Illinois.
Right.
They've beaten everybody else. They beat Texas A&M.
Like, every argument for Notre Dame needs to end with, but Northern Illinois. You know what I mean?
Right?
It does. You can't ignore it.
Ole Miss is a huge wild card this week after they embarrassed Georgia. Like, can you leave Georgia above Ole Miss this week, Jason? Looking at my rankings, how different is yours compared to mine?
There is difference. And we mentioned that the top three are the same. I obviously have Oregon, Ohio State, and Texas. Mm-hmm. And then I do have Tennessee and Penn State ahead of both BYU and Indiana. And the reason is we've already seen what the committee has valued in them. So, I mean, I'm just not anticipating there to be any sort of shocking revelation that they drop considerably.
Okay.
So I've got Tennessee at 4, Penn State at 5. I think it sort of stays chalk in terms of they clearly like Indiana better than BYU. Mm. So Indiana at 6, BYU at 7, 8 Alabama, Georgia at 9, Miami at 10.
Oof.
And then Ole Miss and Notre Dame. I'm dinging Notre Dame. I am.
I don't have a problem with that. How do you leave Ole Miss behind Georgia when they're both 2-loss teams and Ole Miss just embarrassed Georgia? I don't know how the committee's going to do that.
Yeah,
of the win at Texas by Georgia? Like, do we believe in the committee to view the body of work and not be caught in recency bias of a head-to-head matchup? I don't know what to expect.
Okay, so we said we were going to go through the 12, and then we were going to go with, like, the next two.
Yes, first two out.
Who do you have your first two out?
Boise State 13, SMU 14.
Yeah, that's exactly what I have. Boise State 13, SMU. And here's the other part. If BYU is 7, if my math is correct, they would move up a seed in this scenario. Mm. They would instead of being a 4 seed, they would be the 3 seed, I believe.
I can see a scenario where Miami is left at number 10. But how do you, if Georgia was number, what was Georgia last week, 2? Georgia was number 2, 3? Sorry, Georgia was number 3 last week?
3. Yeah, because, yeah, 3.
How does, is Georgia a worse team than Miami? Like, should Georgia be below Miami? That to me is like, splitting hairs, man.
Here's the thing.
Splitting hairs.
It's a good thing we don't have to do this. We can just get to critique after the fact.
So much for a 12-team college football playoff ruining the integrity of the game. How much more entertaining is this? This is wild, for sure. Interesting scenario. We're both going to be wrong tonight, ultimately, Jason.
Oh, of course.
There will be,
you know who also
at least
will be
one
wrong
or two
tonight?
Shockers.
The College Football Playoff Committee. Let's just get that out of the way now.
Our question of the day. What do you believe, as we push forward a little bit and look at the big picture, what do you believe will be BYU's peak in the college football playoff rankings in the regular season? So essentially between now and December 1st after the Houston game, that is the regular season, the Big 12 Championship slated for December 7th. What do you think the peak is for BYU? At its rise underscore coupon X says, if BYU wins out, 5 or 6. I think Penn State and Indiana both drop 1 this week, giving BYU a chance to trend upwards. Meaning you think that they're going to lose on Saturday? So I'm trying to follow the logic. Like they will drop, or does he believe that Indiana is going to somehow drop a spot this week because of the close game against Michigan? I don't see that. I think they're going to reward Indiana.
They have already. So, yes, I believe that they will continue to do that.
BYU fan A on X says, I bet BYU maybe hits top 6 if undefeated because the Big Ten and SEC bias. But to quote Kalani, in all caps, they don't know, but they about to find out. Hashtag BYUSN on X, Facebook, and Instagram? We should answer that question later, and we will.
Okay.
Pose that for a little later.
All right. So most everybody has BYU in the college football playoff. One person who we've had on the show and we love,
yes,
Brett McMurphy.
Friend of the program.
Surprisingly, does not have BYU in the college football playoff. He has, in his latest bowl projections, BYU going to the Alamo Bowl.
Okay.
What do you make of this?
That just tells me that Brett believes BYU is not going to win the Big 12 mm-hmm. championship game, and that he believes that BYU with at least one loss is not going to have enough to get in the college football playoff as an at-large.
Right.
He clearly is stating the Big 12 is a one-bid league for the playoff, and BYU, if they're the second-best team when it all shakes out, is going to play in the next best bowl game available to the Big 12, which is the Alamo
Bowl. So you think he's thinking one loss out of the regular season and then lose the Big 12 title game?
He might be thinking, based on his comments to us,
that he could go undefeated and still
BYU could still win out and lose the Big 12 championship game and be left out.
If that happens, if they go 12-0 and then play in the title game and lose, with everybody being told that you will not be penalized for losing a championship game, that is going to be ridiculous.
This is a very, very difficult scenario for the committee to have to handle. The wild card there is, what do you do with a team like Boise State if Boise State's outside of the top 12? They're still the top-ranked mm-hmm. G5. So then it's not just the top 12 teams that get in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then it's you got to be in the top 11 because Boise State's going to usurp one of those spots. And what if the Big 12 championship winner, Kansas State, Colorado, is also outside of the top 12? Now we're talking about potentially Boise State and the Big 12 champ teams outside the top 12 getting auto bids, and now you have to be in the top 10 of the college football playoff rankings to get that at large.
Oh my gosh, so many numbers. What is this, a beautiful mind?
That's what makes it hard for
yes,
BYU.
There's so much going on.
They would have
this.
To be ranked in the top 10 after a loss in the Big 12 title game to get an at large, in my opinion. I believe Brett believes that's
drama.
Not possible. I know.
Here we go.
I know. Hey, how about this? Yegor Demin and Cannon Catchings, as we move from football to BYU basketball, are now both featured as projected first-round picks in the latest 2025 NBA mock draft on ESPN. This isn't just, you know, some blogger, some basketball. No, this is ESPN's mock draft. What are the chances BYU actually has two first-round picks in next year's NBA draft when they haven't had any pick in the last 13 years?
It's certainly trending that direction, and you are starting to see more news about Cannon Catchings being in that 20 to 30 range in the first round. If not just on his talent and upside, which you always hear when around draft time, we like his upside, just based on that alone, now he has an opportunity, had a really good first game, second game, not as good, but certainly showed his talents. Mm-hmm. You give him a season to be able to work through this offense and be a part of it and continue to showcase his skills. I do not think that's crazy at all.
If it's happening right now already, then the chances are great that these two are going to be projected all season long to be in the first round. Cannon Catchings, to me, is the one that could float into the early part of the second mm-hmm. round. And frankly, if he is a projected second round pick, man, I'm coming back.
He probably comes back. Absolutely.
Coming back for one more year so that you can then show I am a certified first round pick. But yeah, chances are that they're going to be both projected in the top 30 to 32 picks all year long.
It's going to be fun. All those updated mock drafts. Seeing where the BYU players are, right?
We'd love to have you for 2 years, gentlemen.
All right, so the basketball team was 7 spots out of the top 25 in this week's AP poll. What do you think it's going to take for BYU to get inside the top 25?
Probably, well, for sure, a 5-0 start to keep BYU receiving votes. They can't slip up in a game that they're supposed to absolutely dominate.
Yeah.
So they need to probably start 5-0 and then have a good performance in San Diego at the Rady's Invitational. Like that. To me, that's what's going to get BYU in the top 25 is if they can – they need a quality win.
Yep.
So at least one of the two in San Diego, and then BYU is probably hopping into the top 25.
Yeah, you and I are on the same page. I think that weekend in San Diego over Thanksgiving is going to be big for something like that. You certainly have a lot more eyeballs on the basketball game because of the time of year it is and nothing else going on. So I think that is where BYU can really make some hay if they have a really good weekend.
Absolutely. I mean, when you take on currently 25th ranked Ole Miss and you have an opportunity to go get a quality win, then why not take that rank, that ranking, right? Take that spot. Okay, let's keep this thing rolling. Speaking of seven spots out, now let's stay with the seven theme. BYU Women's Soccer is a seven seed and will host a first-round NCAA tournament game. We weren't sure this team was going to get in the tournament, let alone host, Jason. And they get Santa Clara, old West Coast Conference rival. Do you like the first-round matchup?
Look, I'm not going to pretend that I know a whole lot about this year's Santa Clara team right now, but what I do know is the type of program that they have been, the type of athletes that they have in that program, and the battles that BYU and Santa Clara have had over the years. I like this matchup because there is some familiarity, even though there's obviously roster changes over the last couple of seasons. But I love the fact that this team right now, speaking of BYU, is playing its best soccer of the season, playing with a lot of confidence, and you are at home at Southfield. I love the opportunity that is ahead of BYU.
Incredible work by BYU to get a home game. Like, that in and of itself is just incredible. I like that it's an old rival from the West Coast Conference and a team they beat in the College Cup a few years back. Like, there's some bad blood there, so I like that. They don't like each other. But I do worry about the way Santa Clara plays. They like to muddy it up, slow it down. This could very well end in like a 1-0 game and have to go to penalties. Like, that's, it just feels like an overtime game to me.
Yeah,
Jason.
But BYU knows this. They're going to be prepared for this. Coach Rockwood, the coaches, they've seen this. They've prepared for Santa Clara many, many times. So I like the fact that there is familiarity. I think this will help.
All right, let's go.
All right. If you missed yesterday's episode of Coordinator's Corner, you can always find it anytime on demand. Check it out at BYUSN.com.
After the break, Jason Shepherd goes one-on-one with Stuart Mandel of The Athletic. What does Stuart think of how that BYU-Utah game finished? Is he paying attention to the postgame? And where does he expect BYU in the latest CFP rankings? This is BYU Sports Nation.
This segment of BYU Sports Nation presented by BYU Food to Go, the MVP of your next event.
In a magnificent performance for the ages in this rivalry game by the Cougar defense.
Roberts sliding with the catch. And where there's a will, there is a way.
All right, earlier this morning, I was able to talk with Stuart Mandel from The Athletic about the controversial call at the end of the BYU-Utah game, the unique nature of the BYU-Utah rivalry, and where he thinks BYU will be ranked in tonight's college football playoff rankings. Here we go. Stuart, we've got to start with what turned out to be a national story, but it was obviously a local story first and foremost between BYU and Utah and the way things ended. Let's talk about the controversial call on the 4th and 10. You were pretty outspoken about what you thought. What did you make of all that, and then ultimately what happened and how it played out?
Well, first of all, I've been saying for years that the Holy War is the most underrated rivalry in college football nationally. Obviously, it's a big deal there. And if you were watching this game, you got to see exactly what I'm talking about in terms of, this game, the way this game ended literally drove the Utah people insane, it seems like, because it was just such a non-controversial call. Even on the broadcast, a lot of times with these controversial calls, you're pretty dependent on the analysts, and they didn't have a rules analyst, but you had Brock Osweiler saying pretty quickly, oh yeah, that's the right call. That's a good call. So I don't know how it became so controversial other than in a heated rivalry game like that. I mean, it was clearly just an absolutely devastating way for Utah to lose that game. They had it won, if not for this penalty, that gave BYU new life. Never seen an AD go nuclear on his own conference like that. And I hope Mark Harlan was not planning to do anything special with that $40,000 that he now owes the Big 12.
What do you make of how the Big 12 handled that situation afterwards?
They did all they can really do. It's not like the conference has the ability to impose anything, I think, more than a reprimand and a fine. you know, obviously Mark Harlan does not work for the Big 12. He works for Utah. It, in some ways, it kind of, I don't know, I don't want to read too much into his comments. It just surprised me because he, Mark Harlan, is not like a hot-headed person in general. He's a very measured, thoughtful AD, and it just seemingly came out of complete nowhere. But he said in his apology that he had just been in the locker room, saw how devastated the players were. You know, I got to think he woke up the next morning thinking, oh, what did I just do?
I want to go back to something that you said, and you're right. You've been on the BYU-Utah game for a long, long time. You know how big it is, how nasty it can get, and quite frankly, how the games ultimately turn out. They are all so close. They all come down to the end for the most part.
Oh, it's always something weird at the end, right?
Yeah. There's always a storyline that you go in with, and then we leave with a completely different storyline. It's kind of funny, but I was interviewing, because I do the BYU pregame show on radio, and so I get to talk with the opposing coaches. So I had done a pregame interview with Kyle Whittingham. And one of the things that he had mentioned to me was he was surprised that this game was put in the week that it was and not the traditional rivalry week at the end of the year, where it had always been played when they were in the conference together previously. Do you think, because maybe the national attention and certainly with what this rivalry means, that we may see that move to the final week of the regular season like we see most of the other rivalry games being played?
It would make sense. Now, I don't know, you know, I don't really have any insight into what went on with the Big 12 schedule making, other than, remember, this 16-team configuration came together very quickly. It's not like they had a lot of time to work on this schedule. Usually when conferences do these schedules, they're doing them years in advance. I would love to see it on Thanksgiving weekend. Now, maybe the counterpoint to that would be, because there are other, you know, so many other great rivalries that weekend, that they might get squeezed out of a good TV window. But look, this was in the late night window, so it obviously didn't get as big an audience as it could have. The Big 12 in general, as you're seeing, is not getting as many ABC, Big Fox, well, they're getting a lot of Fox, but they're not getting those ABC primetime games now because of the SEC. So you're already kind of at a disadvantage there. But I would love to see the game showcased at the end of the season. One other thing I would just say, because I thought of when you mentioned Kyle Whittingham, this has been such a brutal season for them that I think you saw that spill over as well. I mean, this is a team that was picked to win the Big 12, that lost their quarterback very early in the season and is just not living up to those expectations at all. And frankly, hasn't had a season like this in a while. And here they had a chance to basically save the whole season, right? Beat your rival, put yourself in a better chance to go to a bowl game, and they watch that vanish in front of their eyes. So I'm sure that contributed as well.
We're talking with Stuart Mandel, college football writer for The Athletic here on BYU Sports Nation. So Cougar fans very anxious to find out where BYU will land tonight in the most recent college football playoff rankings. The initial ones last week, they were 9. BYU fans and a lot of national people thought that BYU deserved to be higher. Now there's been a couple of losses ahead of teams. Where do you expect BYU to be tonight when those rankings are released?
Well, I expect them to move up maybe a spot or maybe 2 spots, but I think the committee made pretty clear last week they just don't consider a Big 12 schedule or even a schedule that includes a good non-conference game against SMU to be the same thing as the schedules that most of these SEC teams are playing. I wrote a column today that I think Texas is getting away with just being judged entirely by having an SEC logo on their jersey because they haven't really beaten anybody of note. But this comes down to the committee always just kind of orders the teams based on losses. They're not doing that here. Obviously, BYU is not getting treated the same as some of the other undefeated teams. When Miami lost, they'll certainly fall behind them. I think the one to watch would be Alabama is going to obviously move back up into the top 10. How high will they move?
What do you expect from Boise State? They're obviously out in this region, and, you know, there's some concern that maybe if BYU does have a loss, that, you know, with the way Boise State was ranked, that the committee is viewing Boise very highly, and there may be some jockeying of position between those two. What do you make of what Boise State has done and where they were ranked?
Well, first of all, Boise State's a really good team. I think that's pretty obvious by now. They played the number one team in the country to a draw. They lost on the road. They clobbered Washington State, who hasn't lost since. And so what I saw when the committee ranking came out, I was, I guess, pleasantly surprised. because almost always in the past, the group of five teams, whether it was the UCF teams, the first Cincinnati team, they generally are not as high in the committee rankings as they are in the polls, because the committee just can't look past the schedule strength. But they didn't do that with Boise. And so that does create a situation, a possibility, that I would not have guessed coming into the season, that if they went out and the Big 12 champ has, I don't think 12-1, but if the Big 12 champ had two losses, for instance, the situation Colorado's in, that maybe the Mountain West champ would get that fourth automatic bid, and because of it, a first round bye.
Stuart, just focusing on the final three regular season games for BYU, the Cougars will be hosting Kansas this weekend at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, then a road trip down to Tempe to face Arizona State, and then they'll wrap up the regular season at home against the Cougars in red here in Provo. So the final three games, do you think BYU runs the table in the final three?
Am I allowed to give my real answer on here?
I think that right there tells us, but you go ahead.
I just feel bad raining on BYU's parade at all, because they've earned everything they have. They're not a fluke, in my opinion, or anything what people on the outside might say. But just in my history covering this sport, generally speaking, the teams that have these miracle finishes eventually catches up to them. And the logical one would be at Arizona State, who's having a great season. Cam Scataboo, assuming he's back, he was injured this past week. He's expected to play this week, is the probably the best player in the Big 12 other than the Colorado guys. So that's a tough one. And also Kansas was a team that obviously we expected a lot more from this year. And they finally seemed to, they come to life last week. So I don't think that necessarily is a gimme either. BYU is a team that has, the potential to beat pretty much anybody in their schedule, and they have. But it's also a team that, you know, was fortunate to beat Oklahoma State and Utah, who frankly aren't very good. So there's a bit of a ceiling there, I think.
Look, and obviously the answer to this question will be determined based off of what BYU's record is if they go to the Big 12 championship game and don't win it and get the automatic bid. In your opinion, what are BYU's chances of an at-large berth in the college football playoff if they don't win the Big 12 title game, if they do end up playing in it?
If they go into the championship game 12-0 and lose, they'll be in the playoff. The committee is not supposed to punish a team that played an extra game and lost. Now, they have done that. I remember the USC team, the first Caleb Williams USC team, went into the Pac-12 championship game ranked third or fourth, got killed by Utah, and fell out. But that was in a four-team playoff. In a 12-team playoff, there's no reason a 12-1 Big 12 team with a really good non-conference win like BYU has should be left out, and I don't think they would. It gets dicier if, like we just talked about, they lose a game before then and then take a second loss, because I think the committee is obviously going to pretty much any 10-2 SEC team and possibly Big Ten team, though I think it depends on which one, will probably be viewed more favorably.
All right, Stuart, last question. And I think this is a fascinating topic here. And obviously, we're going to be slanted one way because it's our guy. But I think both Deion Sanders and Kalani Sitake have the credentials and should be up for the Big 12 Coach of the Year. It seems like most of the attention is going towards Deion, and it feels like nationally it's almost looked at as an inevitability. Do you believe Kalani should be talked more about the Big 12 Coach of the Year than what he is?
Okay, first of all, I don't know that it's being talked about nationally at all. I'm sure it's a big topic there. I can't say I'd given any thought to that, but I think if BYU runs the table, Kalani Sitake should win it. Deion Sanders gets more attention for obvious reasons. He's in every commercial when you watch college football on Saturdays, 60 minutes. We know why he gets so much more attention. But he does have Shedeur Sanders. He does have Travis Hunter. This team should be good. They're better than I expected, but they should be good. BYU just came out of complete nowhere. And I think the most impressive thing is that a lot of times when a team, and I know they were not in a group of five conference, but they weren't in a power conference either. And a lot of times when these teams move up, it takes a while. It took Utah several years before it was really competitive in the Pac-12. So to be playing at this level in year two in the Big 12, I think, is a real testament to his ability to build a program.
Stuart, great stuff as always. We always appreciate you joining the program. Fantastic insight. If people are not currently following you or getting your stuff, where can they go find that?
Yeah, The Athletic, theathletic.com. Not just for my stuff, but you know, our whole entire team of college football writers. And I do a podcast called The Audible with Bruce Feldman, and those episodes come out on Sundays and Wednesdays.
Yeah, which is fantastic. I highly recommend it. Stuart, thank you so much for taking a few minutes. Always do appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, that was Stuart Mandel. Appreciate his time. After further review, back tonight as the guys look back on the dramatic win over Utah. It begins at 7 Eastern on the BYU TV app.
Where did Stuart put BYU in his bowl projections? We'll tell you that after the break. Plus, BYU men's and women's hoops. Freshman phenom showing out in the first week of the season and getting some recognition. Headlines on the way on BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jason Shepherd. Let's roll out your headlines.
BYU football turning the page from the win over Utah as the Cougars prepare for Saturday's game against Kansas. Remember, late night kick at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. Also, the second edition of the college football playoff rankings will be released tonight on ESPN. The Cougars were ranked number 9 in last week's rankings. Also, since we just had him on the show, we were talking earlier about Brett McMurphy. Well, Stuart Mandel, who just joined us, just released his projections for the bowl season. He does not have BYU making the college football playoff. He has the Cougars playing in the Alamo Bowl like Brett McMurphy does. And yesterday, the Big 12 announced that next week's game at Arizona State will kick off on ESPN at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Puka Nacua back to work on Monday Night Football last night. 9 catches, 98 yards, and a 23-15 loss for his Rams to the Miami Dolphins. Puka was the top receiver in the game, regardless of side.
BYU men's basketball's Yegor Demon and Cannon Catchings were both included as first-round picks in the latest ESPN mock draft from Jonathan Gavoni and Jeremy Wu. Demon. See, there you go, Yegor. I did it. Demon was slotted as the 7th pick to the Spurs. Catchings going to the Grizzlies at pick number 23. Also, Yegor was named as the Big 12 Newcomer of the Week yesterday. Congratulations.
He wasn't the only Big 12 Newcomer of the Week. Delaney Gibb of BYU Women's Basketball is the Big 12 Freshman of the Week. So, newcomer of sorts, right, on both sides. Gibb averaged 19.5 points, 5.5 assists, 3.5 rebounds, and 1.5 steals per game in the first week of the season. Outstanding.
BYU Women's Soccer earns a 7 seed and will host Santa Clara in the first round of the NCAA tournament this Friday night. BYU has now made the NCAA tournament 7 straight seasons.
And BYU Women's Volleyball drops to number 24 in the latest ABCA poll. The Cougars on the road this week, playing at UCF and at Houston. After the break, Will Farron, big game Bill, has received a lot of love, rightfully so, for knocking through that game-winning field goal in the clutch. It's time to give the holder some love, however. I go one-on-one with BYU punter and holder Sam Vanderhaar after the break. It was a great hold, this BYUSN. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. We are live in Studio B. Yesterday, I had an opportunity to speak with the guy who produced the most important hold of the game for BYU. Talking, of course, of Sam Vanderhaar, who held the kick for Will Farron. He relives the moment, discusses the celebration after, and what he does to turn the page after such a euphoric high. This is Sam Vanderhaar one-on-one. Sam, let's just go right to the moment. You're running onto the field. The clock is winding down. Neither team, speaking of BYU and Utah, has a timeout left, and your buddy Will Farron setting up for the field goal. But you, of course, have to handle the snap and get the ball down cleanly. What's going through your mind as this chaos is ensuing?
Yeah, I just remember going up to Will and saying, hey, this is what we practice for. Like, you know, this is like memories forever, basically. And then we cracked a couple of jokes that him and I, like, just, you know, inside jokes that we both have, just to kind of both keep us relaxed. And you always try and envision that moment and what you're going to feel like. And I was actually a little bit surprised about how calm we both felt. I think that, you know, I guess it's probably a testament to how much work we've done together. And you can't allow your mind to think of what could or couldn't happen, because that's when you run into danger as a specialist. So just pushing that out and just having fun with it, to be honest. I just said to him, I'm like, hey, this is a piece of cake. We got this. Like, no worries at all. And I think he smirked, and I think that's when the camera saw him. So, yeah, it was a fun moment for sure.
You were the one making Will laugh in that moment.
Well, I mean, I don't want to take the credit for it. I think we were both just kind of laughing with each other, and it's one of those things where you just can't be too serious, because if you're too serious, then you start overthinking about like what you're meant to do as a specialist. And it's as best you can, if you can allow your muscle memory to take over and just go out and do what you've been practicing, you know, for 6-7 months doing, then you should be fine. And as soon as I put the ball down on you, it was through. Like, it's, as you said, it's one of those things when, you know, if I get a clean hold, I know Will's going to put it through. So I felt as soon as he hit it, I'm like, it's in. And I got up and celebrated really early. So, yeah.
I find that in my life, sometimes when I don't have time or even an option to overthink something, it just typically goes better than maybe had I had more time. So how much of that factored in here when it was just go time?
Yeah, no, you're right, 100%. I definitely feel the same way. I think it's better to just kind of go out and not having a choice, and just like, we didn't have any timeouts, and you know, there was a potential for a mayday, which is kind of, you go out and you just do it quick. So there was a little bit more stress because I had to kind of watch the clock a little bit. I was trying to time it so that there would be not much time left for them to get the ball back and also for us to get the kickoff. So I think I was kind of just waddling out there, and then I'm like, oh no, I need to hurry up a little bit. So got to my spot, and then I just said to Will, all right, just give it a sec. Like, I just want to watch this clock. And then went through the cadence. And then by the time he kicked it, I think there was, you know, 3 seconds left. So credit to the guys for executing that perfectly.
You have been involved in a fake punt successfully, a fake field goal also successful. Now a game-winning field goal to beat BYU's arch nemesis and a major success. What is happening with BYU's special teams that is creating for this type of overall success?
Yeah, I think, you know, it starts at the top with Coach Kalani, Coach Pop, and then even Coach Hill as well, with his experience that he's had with Australian punters. I think that they've just put us all in a position to be able to be successful, you know, dialing up a scheme that plays to all of our strengths. And they're all just so diligent in what they do. And I've never seen a coaching staff be so focused on special teams, which is something that, you know, is really special. And it's able to make us all go out and perform at a really high level. And yeah, I couldn't be happier and more blessed to be here, to be honest.
How was your first taste of the rivalry as a BYU player?
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I don't want to say it's what I expected, because you never know what to expect, to be honest. But yeah, the hostility and the crowd noise was probably louder than I thought, just because obviously we play at Lavelle and everyone's always bonkers when we're playing there. So it was definitely noisy and hostile, which I kind of liked, because it, you know, got the adrenaline going. And the job never changes though, so it doesn't really matter what if the crowd's loud or there's no one there. It's all the same to me, really, to be honest.
Okay, let's now go to the celebration, both right after the kick goes through, when the chaos of the final play is over and it's actually zeros on the clock and you know you've won. Take us from that moment all the way back to Provo, when you couldn't get off the bus, apparently.
Yeah, no, it was good fun. It was, yeah, that was the first thing I thought when the ball went through. I was like, oh, I can't wait to see the boys dancing and getting after it. So it was really cool to just have that moment. And they're the moments that I probably will cherish forever. I mean, punting well and holding well and kicking field goals is great, but I think the moments that you have in the locker room with all the boys afterwards, and, you know, watching Tyler Batty like get after it and things like that, they're the memories that you'll cherish forever. So that was, it was pretty special. And then seeing Will get crowd surfed at the SAB was particularly funny for me, because I know he would have been very uncomfortable with that, and that made it even better for me to watch. So it was good fun. I actually spoke to him about it after, and he was like, I didn't know what to do. And I'm like, that's exactly what I envisioned when I saw that.
I'd like to point out that after the game, you find me like pretty quickly and you give me this big bear hug.
Oh yeah, I know, he took you down. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, you win the night. I was like, wow, Sam, you're a strong guy. You're strong.
Yeah, no, I felt bad afterwards. I'm like, oh damn, I thought I was playing an Aussie rules game for a second there. So, yeah.
Oh, no. I cherish that memory. No need to apologize. Really, really fun moment. Understandably, yeah. The emotions are super high. Yeah. Now the challenge is you have to compartmentalize the chaos and the euphoria of the weekend, mm-hmm. because here comes Kansas, who just played their best game of the season and looked dominant at times against a very good Iowa State team. So how do you make that move from euphoria to, okay, Kansas on Saturday night in some frigid conditions.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's a good point, because I think if you get too caught up on the wins or the losses, it can drain you mentally and physically. And so I think what our team is really special at is the ability to be able to just move on. So I think that we're all already all watching film and, you know, getting an analysis of this team that we're about to come up against. And, you know, Kansas are obviously a very tough challenge for us, but I know that we're all going to be ready. And I think even the guys, like, you know, you go to church on Sunday and you spend time, you know, with your wife or family, and then you kind of just forget about the game, to be honest. It's cool to chat about it now, but I'm already over it and I'm on to the next. So,
all right, Sam, I need you to give a message to the BYU fans who you hope are showing up in full force on Saturday night when it will be cold, but under the lights at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. What's your message to BYU fans this week?
No, I just want to say to the fans, you know, that we wouldn't be doing this without you. You definitely add an element of motivation for all of us to go out and keep succeeding. So very excited to see you guys there on Saturday night. And let's go get the win and enjoy it once more. So
listen, I want another bear hug after the game if BYU wins, okay?
Oh, yeah, I'll be taking you down this time. So, yeah, beat me for that.
I want you to tackle me.
that'll be good. I'm excited.
Sam, appreciate the time, man. Sending you all the BYU Sports Nation karma we can for good vibes and good luck against Kansas.
No, thanks, Spencer. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
BYU football with Kalani Sitake tonight, featuring defensive lineman John Nelson as the player guest. You can check it out on the BYU TV app. It begins at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Nightmare Nelson. Hey, the BYU special teams have been incredibly special this season. We're counting down the top five special teams plays of the season in Top 5 Tuesday. We're leaving out a kickoff return for a touchdown. It's that good. This is BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Sports Nation, it is Top 5 Tuesday time, and we're counting down the top five special teams plays of the season. Start us out, Jason.
All right, number five. We just had him on the show, Sam Vanderhaar, and the fake punt. It was BYU at Baylor. Cougars are up by 10. They're facing a 4th and 10, their own 35. Vanderhaar runs for 22 yards on the fake punt. It would end in a field goal. BYU would win 34-28. And just a taste of some of the things we would see throughout the year.
Listen, that produced the only 3 points BYU scored in the second
half. That's right. Yeah, it's big. It was huge.
Huge. Number four, Will Farron. But before the Will Farron moment you all want to see again, the fake field goal. How about the flip over the head by Sam Vanderhaar to Farron, who makes a great decision not to throw it and just get the guaranteed first down. This led to, eventually, a Farron field goal. BYU wins 37-24 at UCF.
All right, number three, Keelan Marion's kickoff return versus Utah just the other day. Utah scores to take a 7-3 lead. Keelan Marion returns the kickoff.
Talk to the
Look
hand!
Look at that! He's got nothing but green grass in front of him. 96 yards for the touchdown. BYU would go in front 10-7. That is his second kickoff return for a touchdown this year.
Let's watch somebody else run a long distance for a touchdown on special teams. Parker Kingston, cue it up. Kansas State, almost disaster. Then just a series of crazy events allow him to get around the corner. And he can't beat Isaiah Glasker to the end zone, but he beats everybody on Kansas State's team to the end zone. He would throw up later and feel much better.
And number one, you know where we're going with this. It was this kick from Will Farron. BYU's down two. It is a 44-yard field goal from number 44. It gave BYU a one-point lead.
Oh, yeah.
They would hang on for the win, and all of Cougar Nation rejoices.
Yes. I just love that he said to Coach Papinga, doesn't matter where it is. It's going in. Our question of the day, what do you believe will be BYU's peak in the college football playoff rankings in the regular season? Our elite voice today, presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated, from Rex Culp on Instagram, says, 6 playoffs are in BYU's future.
I like it.
Today's Rise and Shout-Out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
How about we split this up? You take the first one.
Terry McCauley, NFL rules expert for NBC. Thank you for fighting the good fight and justifying and validating the holding call at Utah.
And also Jennifer Rockwood, an unbelievable coaching job for her, and it's not done. women's soccer in the NCAA tournament.
Who argues with the NFL rules expert? Come on! Our thanks to today's guests, Stuart Mandel and Sam Vanderhaar. For Jason, I am Spencer. Shout out to Kalani Sitake as well. Go Cougs!